just a recap of where we've been. This is Employment Law 101, number 3.
Don't forget the jazz hands. Very important.
So thank you, everybody, for joining us on this journey. And anyone who actually logged in the week before, the week last week, and we weren't here, really sorry about that. But we took a little bit of a break so that we could, look after the kids and have a bit of a relax. So we're back now, and we've got a really exciting schedule for the next 6 weeks, I think, really, till Christmas, isn't it, Sarah? So today's session is Sarah and I. So for anybody who doesn't know us, and I'm looking at all the names coming in, so I think the majority of you do, but just for anybody who is new to Employment Law 101, Sarah and I work for MPM Legal. We are an employment law firm who specialise in employment law, obviously, and we have an immigration specialism. I'm Verity Saxon, and I've been at MPM nearly over a year. And this is my lovely Sarah.
I have been with MPM now for 5 years, and for those of you that don't know me, I've had a pretty checkered career in that I started in the city in law firms, and I then spent 9 years as the client in-house at Barclays & Coke, and then came back out to MPM to do some employment law. So Verity mentioned we do immigration and employment law. We've also got an exciting announcement that's coming next week about a bit of expansion into another area that I am leading on. It's a passion project of mine. So watch this space for that. And I'm also going to be doing a bit of a takeover next week of this session to talk about that as well. So watch this space.
Yeah, she's hijacking off Employment Law 101 next week, but they're all very exciting. So for today's session, we are going to keep on the recruitment theme. And Sarah and I, obviously, we love to talk about the law to you because that's what we do. But in our usual Sarah and Verity spin, we want to talk to you about some really important aspects of getting and attracting the right type of employee, particularly in the market that we're looking at nowadays, you know, after we're coming through the pandemic, because things have changed. And I think the truth is, you know, if you had asked somebody 2 years ago when you were recruiting them what they're looking for, you as in resource were thinking, you know, what can we do to attract this person? What would they be looking for? You know, the majority of people you would have thought would probably have said money. Okay. I think that's probably what people would think is important to people. But 2 years down the line, you know, post-pandemic, and we're coming through sort of hopefully the back end of it, I just don't think that is what people are looking for. And I think as you work in HR, it's really important to think outside the box and think about how your organization can not only recruit and engage really great employee and staff, but also how do you hold on to your staff as well? I think that's the main thing as well. How do you retain really good staff? Because you may have heard about this massive buzzword going around in the press and the HR community about the great resignation. Everyone's talking about the great resignation and about how people have become a bit more empowered, if I'm honest with you, about what they want and they need in life. You know, without getting too sort of, you know, spiritual on you guys, I think that the pandemic has really made us think and reassess and reevaluate what is important to us as people and what does success mean to us. Okay, so I think if you're working in HR, you really have to ask yourselves these questions. You know, the people that we're looking for, the people we're looking to recruit, engage or retain, what is important to them? Because I think if you become stagnant in your culture and your values, you know, there are going to be some organizations, and we've talked about this, haven't we, Sarah, so many times when it comes from when you're talking about sort of working from home flexibility aspect. I think if you become too stagnant in your ways, you're going to learn very, very quickly that actually you just can't be like that anymore, because I see a big shift in the power between employers to employees at the moment. Because funnily enough, I think in the pandemic, we would have thought, wow, there'd be loads of jobs and, you know, people will be really desperate to find a new role because of furlough and all these things and happening, lots of movement. And there is so much movement in the market at the moment. I think we're seeing with clients, lots of people are moving. But you know what? Lots of people are moving, but people are not able to recruit and hire the right talent. there's a real shortage for talent. And this is where it comes down to asking yourself, well, what are people actually looking for? And what do they want? And what can we offer as an organization? And this is where we talk about things that are way beyond money. Okay. And I think it's very easy to throw cash at people. Or maybe not. And I think
women,
you know, Sarah will come on to talk about in a minute about how the gender pay gap has become huge over the last 18 months. So that is what we're going to talk about today, and really give you our thoughts and tips on how to really think outside the box when it comes to this. And also, obviously, any sort of legal aspect, we'll jump in on that. So that's where we really want to start. So I think the main thing is, well, what can you be thinking about other than money that is important to people? And I think there's so many different things. But the first one I want to talk about is people thinking about themselves and the well-being of themselves and how important mental health is. And that encompasses and entrenches on so many other aspects of people's lives. You know, we've talked about flexibility before, and I'm not just talking about flexibility for people to see their children. I'm talking about people who maybe don't have children or who are older, whose children are older, but actually still want to enjoy life. And enjoying life is important to them. So having the ability to put their mental health first and their well-being and thinking about flexibility from that point of view is really important. But also, this isn't just about the person, but this is about joining an organization that, you know, advocates that and supports that. So
I think that's a critical point, Verity, that you've just made, which is, it is a candidate's market at the moment. I mean, we work with some great recruitment firms that we know in the market, just, you know, to put on these webinars and things like that, and we talk to them, and they are really clear that it's a candidate's market. There is a lot of power at the moment in being an employee, and, you know, because people aren't able to find the talent that they want. And that means that people are actually asking really searching questions before they join an organization about the culture. And the best way to demonstrate the culture of an organization, or one of the best ways to do it, is to say, well, what do you think is important? What do you offer to your staff? As well as, you know, competitive salary, bonus, blah, 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 which, as you quite rightly said, isn't necessarily top of people's list anymore, or at least it's joint top with a lot of other things. But it's actually saying, well, actually, I want to understand your organisation. I want to get under the skin of your organisation. And I want you to tell me what it is that you think is important for your people, because we can all talk until the cows come home about what a great culture we've got, et cetera, et cetera. But if you then look at the list of benefits on offer for your new starters, and there is nothing in there that speaks to your point, mental health support, you know, or well-being or flexibility. And, you know, people are not going to be interested, because you've got to walk the walk as well as talk the talk. Yeah. So, you know, mental health support, if we move away, and I don't like to move away from flexible working because it is the soapbox that I most often like to stand on. But if we move away from flexible working, you know, in terms of kind of, as you said, to support people's mental health, et cetera, et cetera, people want comprehensive mental health benefits. They want to understand, what are you going to do to support me? Because we've, especially now, we've just been through what, let's face it, is a collective trauma, right? Mm. Globally, not just nationally. And there's some really alarming stats out there. So in January this year, 41% of adults in the USA reported feeling symptoms of depression or anxiety. And the year before that, it was 11%. So, you know, this ongoing grind of the pandemic and, you know, trying to juggle everything is getting to people. And so people want to understand, okay, if I get ill, or even if I don't get ill, what are you doing to safeguard my well-being and my mental health? Mm. And I think that's really interesting, because if you'd have, you know, when I started my career in the city, it was pre-financial crash, and everyone was just interested in who was paying more. You know, there was like a who was paying most, and who bonuses, you know? And I can remember bonus day, and it was a glorious day back then, you know, and I was in my 20s, and that was what I was looking for. But that's just not where we are anymore. And actually, another point you made, which I think is really interesting, is, you know, you said about, you know, anyone can throw money at people, but actually, for businesses that maybe, because of the pandemic or otherwise, can't necessarily throw money at people in the same way as some of their competitors, this is actually a really clever way to offer something different, because it doesn't have the same financial cost as massive salaries and bonuses. I don't know what you think about that, but I just think it's really canny for businesses to get ahead of this.
Definitely. And I think, you know, we're coming to a point in life where people are wanting choice.
Yeah.
And I think, it, you know, like touching on the mental health aspect, but I think a lot of people found working from home, you know, had its amazing benefits, but also it was really hard. It was hard on a lot of people. And I think that people want to understand what organizations are, what's their plan, what is their plan to, you know, to give people choice to either work from home, or if you come to the office, what's the incentive? What's going to happen if I come to the office? You know, are we going to do things that are team building? Are we going to use that time constructively? You know, incentivizing people and making it a really enjoyable, happy place to be. And I think, obviously, you know, we're not all singing and dancing all the time, but I think creating a culture that is it makes people enjoy coming to work is really important, because I think the problem is that you very much can, and we've talked about this a lot, create a very big disconnect with people who either work from home or don't work from home, who come into the office, or people come into the office but then they just sit there and work remotely on a desk, you know, hot desking, but you're not actually engaging people in a way that's making and creating a culture. So I think that's really important for people. And I think as well, and I kind of hate this word, but I think we have to address it, is millennials and the Z generation, where you have got a group of people who very much want to know what you're going to do for them. What are you going to give me? Why should I work for you? And I think they are the types of people that you're going to work very hard to have to try and retain.
Yeah.
I'm going to be honest.
I think that's right.
I think they're a tricky bunch, and retention of those types of individuals is going to be really difficult. And I think that's why it's really important to think outside the box. And the other thing is, you know, a lot of things have happened over the last 2 years to empower people to speak up about diversity. Whereas before, no one really talked about it and no one really was pushing it at the forefront of on their agenda. But actually, it is really important to a lot of people to see organisations that are putting diversity at the forefront. And are, what are you doing about it? Well, you know, why should I join you as an organisation? People want to feel proud about who they work for. And I think that, again, is another aspect of attraction and retention of people, is to what is your diversity agenda and how are you going to support people? And I'm not just talking about race, I'm talking about things like neurodiversity as well. You know, people who are neurodiverse, again, I know for a fact from my own personal experience of my children, but found it really hard working remotely, being dyslexic or you know, having some other neurodiverse issues. So I think it's really important to think about these aspects. And I know some of our clients are really pushing this and are really great at, you know, putting this on their agenda and thinking about it and holding, you know, I can't think of the word, you know, when you sort of have group meetings with people, I can't even think of the word, Sarah, to sort of...
You mean employee resource groups, that kind of thing.
Yeah. To get people's ideas about, well, what does this mean to you? Is this worth it? Would it be of an interest to you?
And I think the employers who are really getting ahead of this stuff and who I find really exciting are the people who are not just ticking the boxes, right? So to your point, first of all, about neurodiversity, there's been some great work done by the BBC. The BBC headquarters in Wales has been architecturally designed to be inclusive for neurodiverse people. It's amazing. I mean, go online and have a look at it. The work they've done is
fantastic.
Yeah, so the building and how it's all set up, it's all been built and designed in this way. It's absolutely fantastic. So that's really interesting. But for me, the inclusion piece and also the stuff you were saying earlier about the kind of well-being and whatever, what it mustn't be is box-ticky. So we all remember like the bean bags in the office and the ping pong tables and all that stuff is great, And it's lovely to be able to use it. But actually, if your ping pong table is gathering dust because nobody dares take a lunch break, and, you know, everyone's heads down and tutting because someone leaves the office at 4:30 to pick their kid up from nursery, or, you know, you always have your staff drinks in the pub on a Friday night, thereby excluding anyone who doesn't drink, anyone who's got to make Shabbat on a Friday, anyone, a Muslim person who wants to make Friday prayers, you're not getting this stuff right. And all of that cultural stuff, people are looking to it when they come to recruitment now as well. They want to see, what are you doing? And I tell you where there is a really important source of data, which brings me on to kind of talking a little bit about the more traditional aspects of how you pull together a package, is gender pay gap reporting.
Yeah.
So suddenly, any organization with 250 or more employees has to disclose their gender pay gap figures online, right? Mm-hmm. And a very quick whistle stop into gender pay gap for those of you who haven't had the pleasure. I've had the pleasure many times because it's one of the things I support clients with. It's very unlikely that an organization has a gender pay gap because it doesn't pay people equally. It's possible, but if you're doing that, you're about 40 years behind the curve, because a group of ladies at the Ford factory in Dagenham, where I'm from, not the Ford factory, Dagenham, went on strike, and that led to the Equal Pay Act, which came in, you know, the 70s. So if you're not getting that right, you've got a problem, you need to talk to us. But actually what we're seeing when you look at organisations' gender pay gap data is we're seeing this really interesting sort of helix shape. I'm going to try and make it for those of you that are online with my hands. It's almost like an H. And the gender pay gap in organisations is being driven because there aren't enough highly paid women in senior roles, okay? And that data is out there for anyone with 250 plus employees, and it has to be out there. And there are organisations, Lloyds Bank's a real forefront, a real sort of forerunner at this, but there are organisations also who are reporting more widely on other important bits of data, like your ethnicity pay gap, like your disability pay gap. Talent are going to look at this stuff, right? Mm. They're going to, even if you don't want them to see it, if you have to report on it, they're going to be able to find it because you have to report on it. But actually, if you are leading the charge, then you can shout about it, and talent are going to see this, and that's going to form part of what they're looking for when you're putting your overall package together. Mm. And one of the things that I find really interesting on this is that people are still asking, as part of recruitment processes, what's your current salary? Now, I think that's a really terrible question. And actually, it's unlawful to ask that question in California now, because it's been clearly recognised that basing salaries on current salary perpetuates the gender pay gap. So that's something really interesting for organisations to think about. Do you want to ask people what their salary expectations are, which is what a lot of people are doing now, to be fair, rather than what their current salary is? Or actually, do you want to go a step further than that and have the courage to say, right, we know what we think this role is worth, and we don't give tuppence for what you might have been paid previously. This is what this role is worth to us. And even if it means you get a 40 grand pay rise, that's none of our business, because as long as we're happy with our market data, and we're happy that this is what the role is worth to us, this is what we're going to pay. And I think that is an incredibly interesting question for companies as they come through to recruitment, when they're thinking about the financial packages, the salary, the bonus, etc. I don't know, that was a bit of an impassioned rant by me. What do you think?
I think that's fascinating. And I think actually, you know, very interestingly nowadays, I think there are so many resources that people can go to and to find out information about companies, you know, like Glassdoor? And people talk about this. They talk about, well, what's your salary, or what actually do you get from this company? Do you like them? Tell us about it. And it can be ruthless. But I think the truth is, you can't hide anymore, can you? No. So I actually think it's really important to think about that, and to be honest to yourself when you are recruiting. I think it's very ballsy to actually not grade somebody on what they're previously on, and actually think about what the job is. I think I love that idea. I think it'd be fascinating to see if an organization would trial that, and if you could let us know if you've ever done that, that would be really interesting, because I'd love to know if how you actually base your salaries. So if anybody's prepared to sort of anonymously let Sarah and I know, just out of interest, because I think that's really ballsy, actually. And I think that's...
But it's also that sort of behaviour is going to drive massive change. And I think you can still do your market research and understand what the role's worth so you're not paying wildly over the odds for something. So I'm not suggesting that you become totally uncommercial about it.
No.
But I'm saying, look, if you want to drive real change and if you want people to see you driving real change, because this stuff gets out there, right? Mm. Here are some things that you can do. I think... one other thing that I wanted to mention, Verity, that I think talent are looking for and is in a really important part of things to think about when you're thinking about the benefits you offer your employees and therefore the what you can offer to people you're recruiting is volunteering. Because actually people are really interested in corporate social responsibility. ESG is huge, right? And there's an increasing requirement on companies to put details out there about their credentials in terms of sustainability and governance and ethics, and again to like stand up and be counted for who you are and what your culture is. And again, that's another way that, you know, if you're not thinking about this kind of stuff, if you're out there making a loud noise about what a great company you are and you're not thinking about this kind of stuff, to my mind you're not quite getting it right, because the two have got to match up.
Yeah, definitely. And I think using those forums with staff to understand what is important to them would be probably a really good place to start, because some people might think, well, actually, maybe we don't have a culture. Maybe we don't know what's important to us as an organisation from sustainability. And I think a really good place to start would be to ask the employees, you know, what is important to you? And maybe make it more of a collective thing. And in that way, they will then feel like they're being empowered because you're listening to them. I mean, going back to sort of the legal aspect here, you know, a number of our clients have been really forward thinking about lots of these policies about mental health, about diversity, about, you know, inclusion, about lots of the things that we've talked about today. And I'll be honest with you, you know, I've had some clients come to me and say, oh, have you got a policy on this? And I'll put my hands up and say, I really don't, because it's such a new area. And my advice to you would be a great starting point would be to go to whatever organization or community or charity that is the forefront of that particular issue. So let's say mental health, you go to Mind and you ask what their support is or what they would recommend, and obviously more than happy to work with you to make it an actual legal document. But I think it's really important to actually seek their advice of the different sort of charity that you're talking about or area, for example, let's say neurodiversity, and get their thoughts and views on it.
And there are some fantastic organisations out there that will offer that kind of support. And we can help you with it, 100%. We can kind of, but you know, it's not about out-of-the-box policies anymore on this stuff. It's about really having a lens on, okay, who are we? And what do we want to put out there? And again, it's not box ticking. It's not a sort of, you know, bog standard handbook. It's a kind of, right, what do we want to do about this, and what do we want to say about it? And of course we can help you with that, but it's much more of a partnership approach where we're all putting our heads together and coming up with something that's really fantastic, as opposed to us going, oh, okay, here's a handbook that we've created and, you know, it's £X, here you go.
On the point that you said about BBC, look, I'm not asking you to all go and get in touch with your architects now and create a new build, but what's really important about that is that touches on the point that I made earlier about making it, why would I come to work? And for somebody who is neurodiverse, I would come to work for that, because you've made me feel included. Now, it could be the smallest tweaks that you could make to somebody's working space that would enable them to feel more included. And it's like Sarah said, don't just tick box and create a neurodiverse policy and be like, great, that's amazing. Actually think about it and think about how your organization maybe could change internally to make things easier for people, or to create a safe space for them when they are having a bit of an overwhelming day and they need to just go and have a cry or just go and rage. You know, is there a space for people? Is there a quiet space to make it feel like, okay, I do want to come to work. I don't want to just work from home and be isolated. I would actually really like to have a choice to be able to come. There's my rant. 25
minutes. Look, I think we've got a whole host of stuff for people to think about. One more very small legal point to make before we summarise and let you get on with your days, which is we haven't really touched on bonuses. Very obvious legal point, but make sure when you're drafting bonus clauses, and this we can definitely help you with, that it's really clear and certain. And ideally, keep the detail out of the main contract. I'd always rather see a discretionary bonus clause in a contract with a separate document that sets out the detail year on year, so that can change, because obviously you want that to be discretionary, but also, again, driving the diversity agenda, you want to have some transparency over bonus so that you're not unwittingly bringing biases in, et cetera, et cetera. But I think, Verity, tell me if I've got this wrong, but I think what we really want to give people as a takeaway from today's session is be really thoughtful about how you're putting your packages together. Talk to your current staff about what they might want, because that will probably help inform what the people that you're coming in, that you're inviting into your organisation want. And don't just think about the cash. It's no longer, as Jessie J used to say, all about the money, money, money. These days, it's also about well-being, mental health, flexibility, culture, volunteering. And if you can get all of that stuff together, then I think you're going to have a really beautifully presented package that I'd come and work for you.
Yes. So thank you everybody for joining us today, and I won't see you maybe for a few weeks, but Sarah is going to be hijacking next week, which she said, for some exciting news.
So it's please- a takeover.
And look, I hope you guys are really enjoying it so far. Any feedback would be amazing, good, bad, ugly, whatever, we don't mind. We don't take it personally, but we definitely take it on board. That's the main thing. So if anybody has anything to say, please just let us know, and we will see you next week or the week
and
after.
And don't forget, if you're not already, sign up to our alerters, follow us on LinkedIn individually and as a business, because we're going to have more of this great content coming for the foreseeable future.
Have a
good
day. Bye,
everyone. Thank you.